What's happening, guys? So we just finished what will be, I think, episode 29 for us, right? This is episode 29 we just finished?
I'm going to punch you.
Well, I know you're saying not to put numbers on there.
I'm not putting a numerical number on
that episode. I know, but it is what it is. Anyways, we just finished up vaccinations and both sides of that conversation, basically, with Jacqueline, and just going into some of the details that those that are perhaps are labeled as the anti-vaxxers, their reasoning, and if you want to qualify or quantify it as science, which I think some of it is. We use some of the references from the CDC themselves and what they were saying. So, it is what it is. But Mike, unfortunately, wasn't able to, as you will see, join us for the entire episode. So we are going to be doing a second part on this one. And we're going to have her back on because we're going to dig into specifically what is in vaccinations. So what are the the chemical compounds that make up the specific vaccine or what it is. So we'll really dig into that. And then also there are a couple more things I don't want to say like press her on, but some other questions that I really want to kind of hone in on. When it comes to the subject matter of the debate of back and forth. And I would love, obviously, I'm hoping Mike is going to be able to make it for that because we can kind of go back and forth on, you know, what effect that really has. I mean, if you think about it, and I don't want to go too long on it, but, you know, the biggest thing that's always said is, you know, what she said basically is that I am not willing to light my child on fire to keep your child warm. And then that's kind of what her point of view is on it, right? And I feel I don't want to speak for you directly, but I feel that you feel that that is kind of your opinion a little bit as well. Is it that? Am I correct in saying that? Or
yeah, I mean that's fair. I would say that's pretty close to entirely accurate,
right? Whereas you know those that are vaccinating feel that it's kind of goes the other way around. They're like, well, I understand it's a personal choice, which is what she said. She's like, it's a personal choice. You know, it should be a medically personal choice on what is taking place as far as if you're going to have this vaccination or not. And those that do vaccinate agree to an extent. They say, well, that's true. But the problem is you're by you not vaccinating, you're putting my child at risk. So at no choice of our own, we're being unnecessarily put at risk. And then this is where you get the people that say, well, if your child's vaccinated, then what do you have to worry about? So it goes back and forth a little bit. And there, I think the main thing that I told her is that I'm looking for transparency on both sides. Too often we end up in these situations where it's just a yelling match. And I don't want that from the episode. And we didn't have that whatsoever, as you guys will hear. We had a pretty decent conversation. There's some things that we could probably press on a little bit more, but I didn't want to too much. She was fantastic at explaining her her hypothesis on all this stuff. I shouldn't even say hypothesis. Really, it should be her theory about why she believes what she believes. But I'd love to have her back on to kind of dig into some of those things a little more because we didn't really get to hit on that too much. And obviously, I don't want to be like a jerk. It was just me and her, you know, because obviously, as we'll see, Mike had to run for a little bit during the episode. So I don't want her to think I was just sitting there hammering down on her like, yeah, woo, woo, why are this, that? But she did tell me, even at the end, I think you heard too when you got back from helping Brittany there, you were able to hear her say that, you know, I enjoy these conversations because we get to understand each other a little bit more and go into it. So that's really about all I got to say for us. The episode in and of itself. Mike, is there anything you want to add to rambling? As always, guys, you know, follow us on Facebook. We might have an update coming that way. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the next coming episode. And we are always, either the next episode of this is going to be her back on for part two, or we're going to have our first anonymous participant. And I believe their name is Bob, because anybody that wants to remain anonymous on the show's name is just going to be Bob. You like that, Mike? I just made that up.
It's going to be...
That's sexy. That's chic, isn't it? Bob.
It might be kind of hard to remember to keep calling.
How hard is it going to be? Yeah, that could be.
I don't know.
We can't say too much about it, though. We gotta remain anonymous. Anonymous, boy. Anyways, it's going to be a good one, though. I'm excited for it because it's going to be... We've been getting into... Like, honestly, we've been in some really dark stuff as of late. Heavy, you could say, with the Waco stuff and wrapping all of that up. And then even getting to the vaccine stuff. And this one that we're going to be doing, if it is the next episode, with Anonymous, he or she or non-binary that shall not be named. It'll be a fun, easygoing conversation. So I'm excited to do that. You know, I don't want this show to only be... digging into like, well, I guess we should just all end ourselves in this earth because we're lost. I do want to have a light aspect on things at times, but be serious and dig into the facts where they're there. And some of those facts are ugly, dark things. So that's what we do here.
And, so really long intro.
Yeah, guys, this is super long. Timestamp for the intro will be... all right, I'm done. I got nothing else to add. You wanna wrap it up? Press the button over there. Roll that
roll
music.
The music.
Yeah. What's happening, guys? Welcome back to Bob. I am William, your host, and as always joined, well, usually almost always joined, or joining me is Micah. And today we have a very special guest, Jacqueline, who I used to work with over at Lee. I won't say much more than that, just in case someone cares. But we used to bump at each other occasionally over there and then have stayed in touch over the years through, you know, Facebook, like everybody else, through social media. And we're bringing her on today to talk about vaccinations as a whole, as we've talked about on our page. So we're going to be given, I guess, a perspective from both sides. But obviously, you know, I'll list my own. What do you call those, Micah? When a reporter has to list their bias, is that what it's called? Or you list out what you're, if you're biased about something. What is that called?
Yeah, I guess you would be. What is?
I don't know what that term is.
I know a disclosure.
Yeah,
you
got to
disclose your.
Okay, so
bias
if I'm disclosing information about myself in this particular topic, it's that I'm in the middle of the road. You know, I'm not sold one way or the other, and I just want to kind of have more information on this. Obviously, Micah, where do you feel you fall? Do you have any bias that way that you?
I mean, I guess I'm kind of, I'm at the point, like, my child did not get any vaccinations other than she got her K shot, and there was one other shot that we went with, but, like, she's never really gotten sick like a lot of other kids, mm-hmm. So to me, it's... I don't know. I'm really on the anti-vaccination.
You're not, yeah, so you had to pick a side. Do you think you're falling on that side? Okay.
Yeah, I would say then, I'm probably if that's for you, that's for you, but it's not right for me. So.
And then Jacqueline, for yourself too. Which, by the way, guys, you know, obviously, welcome her to the show. I want you to clap wherever you're at right now. Stop what you're doing and clap for her. So for yourself. Where do you have obviously a bias? Obviously, we're bringing you on to kind of give the flip side of a not so popular group in today's society or culture. So, do you feel that you fall on what would be considered the anti-vaxxer side of the fence?
Yeah, most people would consider me on that side. Although I would say that on that side, people don't like that term just because they haven't typically started out as being an anti-vaxxer. They've started out as being a vaxxer. So they did what they were supposed to do, and it kind of bit them in the ass, or bit their child in the ass. So, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I didn't start out there. I started out on, you know, the vaccinating side, and it progressed to where I am today. So.
Right. And hitting on that, I guess, a little bit, I guess, by the way, congratulations on your family and everything. It's always exciting. And that's the one thing I would say about Facebook is that it's kind of cool to see, like, even if we're not all talking everything, for people who have kids and just seeing the things that are going on with them. So, you know, congratulations that way, I guess, for being a mom. That's a you have three total, right?
I have three kids. Yep, I have two teenagers and then a 21-month-old.
How old was?
She's 21 months now, but I have a 16 and a 13-year-old. So.
God bless you.
Nice. Good, yeah, it's a big old gap.
Good luck with that. Yep. Oh, man. So I guess to kind of kick things off, too, and if you are the listener, I would say maybe you're already triggered. maybe you clicked on this episode and you seen the title and you know, whatever we come up with, something along the lines of anti-vaxxer or vaccinations or whatever we title it. I would say just approach this like we have with all the other stuff, right? Like when I'm covering crazy fringe topics about whatever, come at it with an open mind. Just like we're going to, you know, evaluate facts on either side and science, what science is even telling us on both sides, and see what the conclusion is. I would say the main thing that I want to see from this, because it's such a difficult subject, and like you guys, we talked about this, might end up turning into a two-parter, we're not sure. It's so broad. It's such a broad spectrum to try and deal with in an hour and a half time. But usually it seems like I found that what my wife and I's experience have been so far, and to be fair, like I said, you know, our two oldest, Liam and Ezra, have been vaccinated all the way. Excuse me, and Brooklyn probably would have been vaccinated, but she was born like just a couple weeks before the pandemic hit. Well, pandemic, I'm going to put that in quotation marks, but hey, don't get too mad at me. So before that hit, she, you know, obviously has had no vaccination. So now we're kind of in a spot where we have a choice on this. And I wouldn't say that I'm sold one way or the other. I kind of see points on either side, but what I've noticed is that there doesn't seem to be a lot of transparency on both sides. There seems to be elements to, you know, whether you're a pro-vaxxer or, you know, anti-vaxxer, that hide some things in the shadows and just kind of run with maybe myths or just misconceptions. So that would be the biggest thing I want to call today, is just, let's just talk about the facts. What does it actually mean? Because currently nowadays, if you, you know, I guess, would you say you fit the bill for the, you're an anti-vaxxer mom? If somebody hears that term, they automatically have a conception of who and what you are and everything you stand for. So before that happens, I would just like to have that conversation and just, let's just talk about it and try to have an open mind. So having started saying all that, I will now shut up and let you talk a little bit about, I guess, where your journey sort of began with all this. What, you know, where were you in the beginning? Have you always been interested in the idea of, well, maybe vaccinations aren't the entire best thing for us, or was there something that happened, like you mentioned a minute ago, that those that are labeled as anti-vaxxers weren't there originally? Something happened to their child or themselves, but usually their child, that maybe switched things up for them a little bit. So what was that for you, I guess?
Well, for me, I would say what it started my journey. I've always been interested in medical aspects, probably mainly because my dad was diagnosed with MS back in, 1985. So I was 2. And I researched a lot on that growing up. I had to do a project in high school on that. But as I got older, I had my first child when I was 20. And I followed along. I kind of just did whatever the pediatrician had told us to do. It was just as most parents do. She hit 5 years old, and it was actually when the Motrin and Tylenol aspect hit, where they recalled it, where there was paint particles in it. So that kind of started me on my journey. I did have a friend that my daughter was in preschool at the time, and one of the other moms, we kind of just clicked and hit it off. I mentioned it to her, and she was like, oh, maybe you need to start looking into this stuff. So she started me on my journey. So I kind of call her my mom in that aspect. Okay. So she started me on my journey. And I'm the type of person that when I start doing research on a topic, I dive right in. I look at everything. I jumped from the CDC website. I looked at the history, you know, of the viruses, of the bacteria. I go through it all. And I kind of just poke around every, like, you know, at the time when you could actually find everything. Now everything's kind of banned, and, you know, you have to really, really dig deep.
We don't talk about that. That's a conspiracy now. We can't be bringing up the fact that things are being removed or
it's ridiculous.
Sheltered.
Well, and it's openly talked about now, though. Since it's all kind of coming into the light, and we're getting in the hot seat on that. But so she was 5 when I started down that journey. She had just gotten her last vaccine, for the 5-year-old vaccine, which I believe at the time was the chickenpox. That's what she needed to enter into kindergarten. So at that time, once I started researching, my son was 2.5. So I just halted it all. So I halted him until I could kind of figure out what was going on, where I stood, what I wanted to do, what I didn't want to do. Cause you know, you can kind of delay some, you can pick and choose a la carte if you want to. And then I realized as I dug a little bit deeper that there was no way I was turning back from that. That was a rabbit hole that I went down. I was not willing to turn back because what I found was not good.
Yeah.
A lot of deceit.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted, did you get much, I guess, pushback or maybe even from family or from your medical physician as far as with your son saying that, hey, I'm not so sure I want to vaccinate?
You know, with my family, I didn't really voice my opinion on the topic just because it was such a personal decision.
Yeah.
When I did talk with them about it, you know, always the go-to stance is, well, what about polio? Which, realistically, by that time, my kids had both had, you know, they both had their polio vaccine. So, you know, all things considered, my daughter was considered up to date at the time. My son wasn't, but he had gotten a sufficient amount. And even at that time, we actually switched over to a family doctor because I didn't really like the way, we probably switched over when my daughter was about two. I didn't really like the way the pediatrician was going because they tend to think outside of the box. So I switched over to a family doctor. And when we made the choice, she said, you know what? That's fine. She said, they're really probably good to go anyway. So I said, oh, okay. No big deal. So we kind of just moved on from there. But, you know, as you kind of dig into that subject and you really start to look at, you know, the pharmaceutical companies, the testing or lack thereof testing, the length of, you know, trials that they go through, the not so much aspect on, you know, after the fact, once they actually start implementing it into the schedule and these kids get it, they don't actually look at the side effects after a certain amount of days, which they should, as with any medication. So all of those things, you start to see kind of the lies and the deceit unravel, the monetary gain, even though kind of when you hear those taglines, you know, anti-vaxxer or, you know, there's no money to be made or, you know, it's safe and effective. All of those things, you know, that, you know, those people are the ones that actually aren't researching the topic.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but it's
weird too, because I just actually found this out recently that talking about the monetization part of it is that you have in the U.S. where it's massive. I mean, I think when I looked up a few numbers the other day, it was saying in 2000, and I think it was 10, that from then to now, it is now tripled, and it was already a multi-billion-dollar business then. So for it to have tripled in a decade is pretty crazy, but it seems like, and it's not everywhere, but other parts of the world, it does seem like it's built into their plan where they're not actually making. I think the one country was saying something like vaccinations only made up like 3 or 4% of their total income, right? Like of a big pharmaceutical company. But on the United States end of it, it is a totally different story. So it is funny that I've noticed that that's an area where I've seen a split with people where there's some people saying, hey, they're not making any money off this, which is true in some countries, right? Or it's a rational amount of money that they're making. It's reasonable. In the United States, it seems to be treated as our whole medical field is, as a true business. It's not exactly always for the best of humans. Yeah. It's not always. So that part is worrisome for me. I apologize for interjecting. I'm sorry, but yeah.
No, you're good. No, it is. It's a huge money maker for the pharmaceutical companies. I was looking on one of the guys that I follow, actually, I don't know if you guys are familiar probably, but with RFK Jr., Robert F. Kennedy Jr. So he is obviously an environmental attorney, and he started Children's Health Defense, and he talks about a lot of that stuff. And on his website, I can't remember the number, but by 2027, it was some crazy billions of dollars that the pharmaceutical companies were going to make. And to think, you know, that they're making money, not that they shouldn't make money. I do think that all companies should make money, but
yeah,
they're making money off of something that's supposed to be good for the community. Yeah. I feel like there's ill intentions with that. That coupled with them having blanket immunity to where you can't sue them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it doesn't actually give them, it doesn't make them actually want to do good. What is that noise?
That's Mike, you better get down to your bomb shelter now, bro. Get the guns ready.
Somebody probably got into a car accident. I apologize. I'll mute myself real quick.
He lives in a rather small town. I don't know if you'd call it like a village. And so if anything happens, that's how they notify their fire department. They literally set off the siren. I mean, anything. Like Mike was saying, they could have a cat stuck in a tree, and that's how you're going to get notified. So it's kind of a weird process, because like, what if it was ever really bad? Like, we need to know when that siren is going.
You would think it's a cat in a tree.
Yeah, like, we need to know. But yeah, getting back to, okay, so your process started with your daughter and your son, and then now once you started to do this deep dive, I just got to ask the question, to be fair, you know, were you just solely relying on, I don't want to say there's a community, but those that maybe have been researching this are their own little community, right? That are looking at an alternative, my mom being part of, like, she was really big into, Mike, what were those called back in the day? Like homeopathics and that, like, there was a couple different groups. Yeah, and this was before the internet where you could just connect with a group, right?
Yeah.
So it was much more small knit, and you had to have like a book, you know, maybe whatever your research was. So for you, obviously, what were 10? You said over a decade you've been looking at it. So like 2010, the internet was around. It was readily available.
Yeah.
But were you comparing it to, you know, what the CDC was saying? Okay, so you were to I'm just asking the question so that for those that are listening, again, we're just trying to be open here. You know, I don't want to paint you in a picture of like, I was this crazy lady just like talking to two people in an alleyway. We decided that.
I actually did not. I did not do any of that. I think I was on Facebook. I don't even know, to be honest with you, Facebook.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure it was around, but I don't know that I was on at that time.
Yeah, it was on.
No, but what I initially started doing, I looked at each disease. My first one was polio. That was my first disease that I looked at because I figured, you know what, that's the go-to one that everybody, you know, freaks out about, the iron lung.
Yeah.
I'm going to look at polio. I'm going to actually look at the disease itself and kind of gain knowledge on that. Plus, I went on the CDC's website. You know, I went through all of what I could find. Their website's a little funky. They actually kind of siphon through. So you really have to dig through there and search very specific words to get what you want.
Mm-hmm.
But which is really bothersome in itself now that I'm at my point where I'm at today. But and you start to realize, though, that, you know, it's such a big topic on the polio conversation, but you start to realize that the actual polio itself isn't really that bad, because not when everybody thinks of polio, they think everybody gets paralyzed. You know, they instill the fear in that. And it's kind of that's what they've done. They've done a wash, rinse, repeat with instilling that fear. And realistically, the statistics on polio, a very, very small percentage actually get paralytic polio. Whereas people, they've kind of painted a picture that everybody gets paralyzed, and that's not the case. Most of the time, a huge majority of the percentage, it's literally just mild symptoms. Some people don't even realize that they have it. It could just be like a little fever. It could be a runny nose, very simple stuff. No different than even just say like kind of what's going on right now with the COVID. It's most people are going to have kind of a runny nose, maybe a slight fever, and that's it. And they go on about their day.
Oh, it'll go down in the history books as the Black Plague for sure. Of of the 21st century.
What to I mean, honest? it is the virus that shut down the world. So it does have that behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that is another topic.
Yeah. Oh, God. I'm telling you.
But okay, so really quick then, talking about the polio stuff, because I know that when you and I talked about this a little bit too, I said I want to give a little bit of a history along with, you know, like we're talking about your history with this relationship, but also, you know, humanity's relationship with vaccination. So when did polio take place? What, because for our generation, I'll be honest, that hasn't really been a threat, right? Nobody, up until we're now supposed to be again having some of these outbreaks between that or measles or whatever. But when was the last big polio really a threat to humanity? And what did that really entail, I guess, when you're looking this up to get those, to get that information you're talking about not being as drastic?
Yeah, I mean, you can go on the CDC website. There's actually a portion of the CDC, and I can send you guys links too.
Okay, and we always put those in the show notes so people have, you guys listening will be able to go to, you know, check this out yourself too.
Yeah, on their website, if you like CDC and you think that they're a credible source, but I wanted to look at both aspects. I wanted to look at what I could dig up on the internet and actually what's coming from the CDC and the WHO, even though now the WHO is kind of out. So polio has been around a long time. I mean, at least kind of from the history books, they say it's been around, or at least, you know, the way they describe certain illnesses back, you know, in 1700s and things like that. But But if you looked on the CDC website under the pink book, my daughter's calling me right now, I'm sorry.
No worries.
You can actually, it tells you on here that that polio actually peaked around 1952. And then, and it does say with more than 21,000 paralytic cases. But what they don't tell you all the time is that even if you become paralyzed or a portion of your body's paralyzed, most of the time that's temporary. So you're not going to need to be on an iron lung. You're going to regain that feeling. You're going to go back to normal after the virus runs its course.
Yeah.
And even within here, it talks about, you know, 72% of them being asymptomatic, kind of like what they're talking about now in regards to COVID. And then even so this says non-paralytic aseptic meningitis usually follows several days after the illness, occurs in 1 to 5% of polio infections. So that's just 1 to 5% of people that actually have the infection. So that's not even talking about the entire population.
Yeah.
And then fewer than 1% of all of those infections result in flaccid paralysis. So
which is that's 1%. Because I don't really know what that. So I'm sure one of our listeners don't know that because I don't know. Is that just mean that you're basically your body just stops functioning? What exactly? Like you just stop breathing?
It really depends on how it affects you. It ends up attacking like the neurological aspect of it. So
okay,
it really depends on your body and how it attacks. Some people it can be the breathing. Some people it can be just your legs or your arms. It just depends. It really, I mean, everybody's going to be different. No different than any other virus. It's going to affect everybody differently.
Yeah, because if you just Google pictures of, like, the polio stuff, it's, mm-hmm. you know, pretty haunting pictures. You're going to, it's not, yeah, to say they're not pretty pictures to look up. And I mean, to be fair, those are real cases, right? Those aren't, we're not saying that it was faked, but.
No. Well, a little bit of those pictures were faked, so I will say that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't, I mean, it's, here's the sad thing about like having the most information readily available at the palm of our hand we've ever had as humanity that we know of. And so many things have been doctored and falsified along the way. Now we're, as we can see what's happening in culture, rewriting history at times. And it's terrifying. I mean,
it's very terrifying. And that's the hard part is you have to dig deep to find that. And you have to actually be willing to kind of have an open mind and critically think about those things and not actually thinking about it because you're fearful. I mean, it's always going to be fearful. I mean, you're going to be. You don't want your child to die. You don't want them to become paralyzed. But the low percentage, you have to weigh that. Do you want to take the chance of kind of just getting the mild case of it, or do you want to go with a vaccine that you don't know what the side effects are going to be?
No, so, are we still using the original vaccine today, do you know, is what we were using in, you know, the 50s for polio?
No, the original one was the oral polio.
Okay.
And that is a huge topic that I think everybody should look into. They actually switched it over to a different vaccine as time went on, because that oral polio, while it worked to help get the immunity levels high, it actually caused polio.
Oh, well, that's not good.
No, and then that's actually they're actually utilizing that vaccine over in third world countries right now.
Yeah, I had seen a little bit of that with everybody's favorite person in the world now. So that's
he's kind of taking Micah, back people. It is I will say
Micah's,
that
Micah's favorite human being to look up to. He adores him. He has a picture of him above his bed as he goes to sleep at night. just kidding.
It's not quite that bad.
We'll get into him later. That's
another topic.
So essentially, though, was polio virtually eradicated by the 60s? In a sense. I mean, when was the last real threat of polio that we can look at history? Like you're saying, the last big outbreak or peak of it being in the 50s. And I can't think of anything else since then. And now it's being told again. We're being told that it's coming back and it's going to hit harder than ever. But essentially, it was well, measles being more than measles is the one I see.
Yeah, measles has kind of always been around, though, I will say.
Yeah, But now with the polio one real quick, is that the one where they, that was the one where you were saying where they would actually give, what they were taking was end up giving, so even if you were a healthy child who was not going to get polio, you would have then in because of that, in relation to that, you would end up with polio, at least symptoms?
Potentially, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is it, do you think that that's a start for a lot of people that have questions about is vaccination safe from a child? Is that a big point, like to, I guess, point back in history to look what happened here? Is that a big, I guess, could you say, component of that? You know, maybe vaccinations aren't the best for us?
I'm sure. Well, because they realized actually that because it was doing that, that they had to come up with an alternative option. Okay. So that's actually when they introduced the new form of the polio, what we get today.
Okay.
Which doesn't work as well. And it actually doesn't, to my knowledge, it actually doesn't stop you from getting it. It just lessens the symptoms, which is kind of similar to some of the other vaccines as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think vaccines are necessarily supposed to prevent you from getting them so much as it is supposed to, like, either help. Yeah, it's either supposed to, like, lower the symptom level, or it's supposed to, like, somewhat help you not get the sickness. To me, that's like you have a whole host of possible side effects to all of these that, like you said, you have no idea what 25 years from now what that vaccine could do to somebody, you know, because you're injecting these things into tiny children who, like, I mean, there could be so much happening to that child, you know, well before they actually develop, that you don't know what's going to happen later on in life. So right. I do think that's something significant in being against vaccinations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I would say, though, I mean, I guess if you think about it, and this is just me spitballing off the top of my head, so don't hold me to the, if these numbers aren't exact, somebody's like, I'm sure there's one person out there right now who's like got their glasses on and they're like fact checking everything. So for that person, hang on. But I'm pretty sure they said that currently in today's society, modern, I guess you could say, from 2000 on, or I guess probably the 80s on, that every vaccine before it hits the market is supposed to have gone, I think they said something like between 10 to as much as 25 years, but at least 10 to 15 years of research and been tested on people and, you know, gone through this process before it's readily available for the public. So, I mean, but my question, I guess, if they are doing that, then, and that kind of gets more into where what we're currently hitting on, where we're all of a sudden getting a vaccine that's going to be the miracle vaccine in like 6 months out of the blue. But to that point, you know, that's their answer. I mean, if somebody's listening saying, well, you're not just giving something random to somebody, this has been, you know, heavily tested, and you've had scientists sit down and doctors and study this to see the effects on a human body. So, I mean, to that point, Mike, I'm just saying that is the answer that you're going to hear from somebody who's obviously supports vaccinations all the way. So, I mean, is that taking place? Are they really going through that, you know, process?
It depends on the vaccine. As far as the process, typically what happens is you have the pharmaceutical company. So let's just say the polio vaccine. Okay. So they have the pharmaceutical company that makes this polio vaccine. They bring it to the FDA, the FDA reviews it, you know, says, okay, well, this is what you need to do to get your trials going. This is the guidelines that I want you to follow. So then they go back and they do those clinical phases, whether it's 1, 2, or 3 phases. They follow those clinical phases through. They come back and present that to the FDA. Then the FDA looks it over and says, okay, yep, looks good or doesn't look good, whatever the scenario is. And then from that point, it goes over to another committee where they either approve or not approve it to be put on the schedule. But the problem is that with a lot of those studies or those clinical trials, they're not, there's a lot of falsified data within those clinical trials.
Right.
Because it wouldn't be good. I mean, you have thousands and millions of dollars invested, you know, into making these vaccines, you know, they actually want it to roll to the market. So there's currently a CDC whistleblower right now in regards to the MMR vaccine for that purpose, because he said the data is falsified, which that kind of goes back to the one of the comments that we had talked about with as far as the Andy Wakefield aspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's the and I'm kind of on top of that with the process of it going from the FDA, you know, to the ACIP for it to actually be rolled out into the childhood vaccine schedule or the adult vaccine schedule, is that they have allowed some of the people that are on the FDA committee to actually approve or not approve are allowed to actually hold stock in the pharmaceutical companies.
Hmm.
So if that's not a conflict of interest, I don't know what is. I don't know how you can sit there as a person and kind of be an unbiased and say, okay, yep, this is safe, this is not safe, when you know you're going to have thousands of dollars hit in your pocket.
Yeah.
You know.
I know that was one of the I was doing.
Just real quick, apologize. My wife popped a tire and I have to go. So I will leave it recording if you guys want to continue, but I gotta go. So
Okay. Tell Brittany good luck. I guess. Sorry, I forgot what you were saying because of him bringing that up
about just the conflict of interest.
Right, that was one of the first big things that I, you know, for me that I was like, well, that's intriguing. That, you know, because what was happening is when the first conversation took place, we noticed that there was a majority of. Whether you're just talking about yourself, but particularly parents, there's probably at least, I would say, 80% of us that are kind of sitting in the middle that just want to do what's best by our children, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're getting all this evidence, overwhelming amount of evidence from, for sure, the CDC and all of them is saying that it's good. And if you're not doing it, excuse me, you're almost getting a fear-mongering campaign of you're going to kill your child, and not only your child, but you're also putting millions of other children at risk to die too. And then on the flip side, you're getting evidence from those that are saying, well, maybe there's more here. And that was one of the main things that I thought was more tangible than maybe some even the other things that haven't been as researched yet or provable. Because for me, as much as I love fringe stuff, or I shouldn't call this fringe, but maybe what could be labeled as a conspiracy theorist, because some people feel that anti-vaxxers are conspiracy theorists. That's another term that gets thrown on them. Mm-hmm. But that is a provable fact right there, what you just talked about. And that was the first thing that really clicked for me. I was like, that does bring up some questions, because you have a serious conflict of interest, you know, with that situation. If you're literally going, yeah, it looks good. And this is, like we said, it's like, well, how do we word it before? Like, you know, like you being the taste tester of a cake that's going to be shipped out to be sold, but you're making money off the cake. And, you know, are you going to say that it's not good?
Right.
But, you know, I mean, that is a huge point. And I think that is something, is that something that's easy enough for people to look up, or like, is that something that's hard to find if they just type that in? Do the clinical trials get money for this, or how would they exactly go about looking that particular piece of information up, I guess?
Well, as far as like the FDA, like, you know, who approves and not approves, they're probably going to have to do some digging on that one, I would say. Okay. I think right now with the COVID stuff, I guess what's good in regards to, I don't want to say good because COVID's not good, obviously, but with it being kind of out in the open and under, you know, scrutiny and under, you know, the microscope, is that more people are starting to question this. And they're seeing that the government is funding all of these trials and kind of starting to pay millions and billions of dollars to get these rolling so that they can hit market and, you know, start to get them out to the people. So everything is under the microscope with this, which is good, because everybody's saying, okay, well, why are we funding this stuff? On top of, you know, the pharmaceutical company is going to make money off of this. Obviously, they're getting blanket immunity, which is not good, which a lot of people either don't know or they don't see the problem when it comes to vaccines with the pharmaceutical companies getting that blanket immunity. They don't really realize that they actually have no recourse to sue the pharmaceutical companies if they have, say, their child passes away, or they end up with encephalopathy, or, you know, there's a multitude of things. I mean, there's even things like with rotavirus where, you know, you're basically like your bowels like twist and cut off and you can die. I mean, there's all sorts of things that can happen, and there's no recourse for the parent.
Well, I guess that's another
thing. It's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah, no, but you bring up a good point, which is another thing I think it's kind of important. I guess we could shift gears a little bit since Mike is not here. I know he might have had some things I think if I brought up he'd hit on, but I guess this is just the two of us now. I would say it's important to since we never finished early, your stance on everything, where, what is your stance on, say, what vaccinations started as and where they're at now? Because for me, I do think, would you at least say for yourself, do you feel that vaccinations was one of the greatest discoveries in the 20th century? Or the, I guess you could say 19th century, I'm sorry. Do you feel that it originally did save millions and countless of lives? I mean, do you feel that it started from a place that was good, you know, with a genuine, like, doctors truly caring about saving lives? I mean, that's really what they do. And I don't think there's doctors out there specifically right now who are, you know, have the goal of, like, killing people. So I'm not implying that. But do you think, I guess, if we're talking about our relationship with vaccinations, had they never been brought about, what would have happened? Do you think that these diseases would have just ran their course, or do you think that they would have wiped out a good chunk of us?
I mean, I think it's like with anything. I think it's like with COVID right now. We don't have a vaccine for that. So I think that it would be similar to that. I mean, obviously, some of these illnesses are more severe than others. You have some that are bacterial that can be, you know, fought with an antibiotic. You have some that are viral that are very, you know, kind of mild, you know, in most people. You know, it's a hard pill to swallow. I because in that respect, I'm kind of the natural mindset of, like, this is part of us evolving. You know, this, mm-hmm. it's just part of nature. It's going to happen. Death is going to happen. Is it easy? No. Do I want people to die? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But it is part of nature. So, I mean, I kind of just feel like that is going to happen. Do I think that vaccines started out in a good place, you know, with good intentions? I think initially, yes. But I think it kind of started to turn the tables. I mean, even just with the Qatar incident, if people start looking up actual C-U-T-T-E-R incident, you can actually look at that and dig deeper into that aspect and just kind of the deceit around all of that. It's, you have to be willing, you know, to dig into that. And that's the problem, is most people just take everything for face value. You know, and not actually dig deeper. I mean, they dig deep when they want to find their car seat for their kid. What's going to be the safest car seat? What's going to be the safest mm-hmm. car? What refrigerator do I want? You know, what kind of loan do I want on my house? Yeah. You know, what, you know, what kind of dog food should I give my dog? You know, I mean, they research on those, you know, I don't want to say silly because they're important, but
yeah,
you're literally injecting your child with unknown toxins, unknown, you know, substances.
Well, and that's what's, I guess, interesting about this, is that you have, because it brings up a conundrum for us a little bit, which is that you have this situation of, Mike would know the term for this, but when you rely upon scientists, right? So we're relying on an expert in a field of whatever their field of expertise is. If we're relying upon them to give us that answer, right? So even looking up the car seat, what is the safest car seat? Well, we're relying upon whatever individuals have taken time and that's been their job to research that. And we're trusting them as the professional or as the expert to do the right thing and, you know, provide the correct information so that we can make an educated choice. And so that is, I know, a huge pushback with people that specifically are all about vaccinations, is that they cannot wrap their mind around the fact that some people are questioning science. And I think in particular, I would say that as of the 21st century, excuse me, now that the internet could, you know, for better or worse, has come about, we've had a lot more people question these things. And it's like a two-edged sword, because there's good in that. And then there's also a really scary factor in that too, that we're denouncing things that truly could be absolutely life-threatening, because we're saying, well, I don't believe science. Like, I guess my thing is because I love fringe stuff too, right? But I always, for myself, like, in the back of mind, try to have like a picture, like a life rope, that I can't go so deep into something, you know what I mean, down a rabbit hole, that I'm holding to something tangible. So I always ask Michael when we're talking about crazy stuff, like, where do we draw the line in the sand? You know, are we saying all scientists are in on this, you know, or are we just saying the ones that are specifically studying this? You know what I mean? Do you kind of get what I'm saying, or am I explaining it in a bad way?
No, I don't think that all scientists are in on it. I don't think that all doctors are in on it. I do think that a lot of doctors don't actually dig deeper themselves. You know, they're basically, they're taught what they're taught in school. through medical school, and then they go out, you know, into their residency, and they do, you know, whatever they choose, I guess, whatever specialty they choose, but they're taught a specific thing. It's kind of no different than when you and I were in school and this is what you're taught about history. And then as you get older, you realize, yeah, okay, some of that history was not accurate. So yeah, I'm going to kind of figure this out myself. It's no different from them. They're taught. I mean, if you ask doctors, mm-hmm, anytime I've heard a doctor talk about it, or even say a nurse, they literally have like one day, not even, within their, you know, within their schooling that's about vaccines. But it's not about, you know, what's in vaccines, what are, you know, yeah, what are the, you know, side effects. It's about, this is a schedule, this is what you give, this is when you give it, this is why you give it. And then it's left at that. So if a doctor wants to actually go out, you know, they have to do it on their own time. But yeah, there's pushback with it. I mean, you see it now with the COVID stuff. Anything, mm-hmm, outside of what the mainstream media is saying, or what outside of what Fauci is saying,
yeah,
is like, you know, it's a conspiracy theory. I mean, mm-hmm, it's, but if you have thousands of doctors that are willing and stepping forward for, yeah, no gain other than to save people, and yet, you know, they're being bashed.
Well,
and that's bad.
That is a great point you bring up, though, about exactly what you just said, as far as that their whole point is being in the medical field, being a doctor, and you take an oath, you know, to mm-hmm, first do no harm. So I do think that we have to be careful that, you know, there are extremists on either side. So there are extreme, right, anti-vaxxers, I guess we could say, since that's the term we're using, that, you know, believe that there are doctors who absolutely know what's in there, and they know that they're poisoning children and, you know, gonna give them these diseases. I don't think that that is the, I think that doctor is has received the amount of information they received through education, mm-hmm, the profession they went into, and they're making a choice on that. But like you're saying, is they are not actually perhaps fully aware of what all is in that. And that was kind of tied back to my original question of where vaccines began to where they're at now, saying, are they the same animal that they were, that they started as back then? And obviously it wasn't, right, with the polio thing. And that's sounds like a good thing, because I don't, right, think we still want to get the original version. But I question what a vaccine was before, and maybe they're being taught kind of that method of like, this is what the concept of a vaccine totally makes sense to me. Like, I don't know about for yourself, but the whole idea of exposing your body to it, to some sort of an intruder to build antibodies to it, totally makes sense. I get that. And we experience that with or without vaccines. We do, right? But I think their fear is specifically like with flu, something that mutates, is that you know, got to keep up with it, and then it leaves. And I don't remember what they're called, but it leaves these particles that are left over that recognize when that is coming back in your system, and then it's more prepared to handle it. You're still not going to, like Micah had brought up earlier, you're not going to be cured, but your symptoms could be far worse or far less than what they could have been. That, right, part of it makes sense to me. And I don't know about for yourself, does the concept, I guess, of vaccinations make sense to you? Or is that, I mean, that's totally, if you don't agree with it, that's fine. I'm just asking for yourself.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think the concept is good,
mm-hmm,
if we actually fully know the body's entire immune system. And I think, yeah, that science is still evolving with that. I don't think that science really knows how the full immune system functions. And that's the problem. So my take on it with the vaccines, the idea is good, except it's not following the same path as a normal virus or a normal bacteria would follow. So with the vaccine, you're getting it injected into your system versus, yeah, if you were to say contract, you know, the flu, you're going to, you know, someone's going to sneeze and you're going to inhale that, or it's going to get in your mouth, you're going to ingest it, and it's going to follow through your normal digestive tract and follow through that immune response. You know, it'll push it out and say, okay, nope, like, got it taken care of. I already had this before, or it didn't have it. So then it's going to follow through and say, okay, well, we're going to start attacking that.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to establish those antibodies, and then we're going to kick it out and you're going to be done.
Yeah.
So versus the vaccine, they try to bypass that aspect,
mm-hmm,
without actually knowing fully what it's going to do to your body in, say, 2 months from now, 5 years from now, 20 years from now, because they, yeah, don't know that. They haven't studied that. So that's the hard part. I would rather gain that natural immune response versus that artificial immune response.
Right.
Because your body's meant to do that.
Yeah. Well, and it is interesting, and as far as like what you're saying makes sense. Like, you know, you're bypassing the liver by a large margin, right? And I mean, obviously, there's listen. I'm not a specialist in it, so this is just general knowledge. I have barely general knowledge of it, but the idea of completely bypassing your liver, and there's so many other things that also process what is coming in your body. It is bothersome, but on the flip side of that, I get those that are maybe fuming listening to this going, oh my god, we'd rather have polio or whatever the disease is just ravish your body, so you would rather that. But I guess that's another good point you bring up about them not being liable. Excuse me, again, going with the whole our history and where things has vaccinations or has this the idea of vaccinations always been a business model, getting into, you know, big pharma kind of deal? Is it always been that model, or was it just initially, you know, where did they roll out this idea that, well, okay, we can't be sued? You know, where was that switch in the timeline of, you know, because with other things, you can absolutely, I mean, we've all seen the TV commercials. Have you taken this back in 2010? Mm-hmm. Did you get this mesh, or did you get this, you know, the Johnson powder one was another one that they had an issue with, yep, or whatever, for a while.
Vioxx or,
all these things can, and it's crazy to hear the list, even with those though, even when they're advertising, do you have headaches? Oh, we'll take this. And then like they list all the terrible symptoms, and there's like a person picking flowers in a field. It's terrifying. Yep. My favorite one.
It's extremely scary.
Yeah, that my favorite one they had for the longest time, and it might be down now. I can't remember which one it was. It was for an allergy pill, though. That's all it was. It was for, and don't get me wrong, some people get really bad allergies. But for
I don't take anything for it.
Yeah, for an extreme allergy, it was like listing all the stuff, and normal stuff like diarrhea and whatever else. But then it like went into sudden death was one of the last ones that was mentioned. I'm like, so what sucker took it and just died on your panel or whatever version you went of your testing? Because that means somebody just died. But anyways, I guess what was that correlation of it being that kind of a medication and then moving into, all right, we're like immune to this idea of we can't be touched? Because that is interesting to me that I kind of get it right, because I think probably their fear is that if they got sued, you could collapse the entire system, right? You could not only cause fear or genuine questions, but you could deflate the system internally because if too many people are having issues. And off the top of my head, for measles, it isn't like one in every 3,000 children had a reaction, I think it was. Somewhere in that range of it, from getting the vaccination, when they had the seizures or whatever. So if one in 3,000 and you're vaccinating, you know, a couple million kids a year every season or whatever, you're guaranteed to have, hundreds of man, it would be over thousands, I guess thousands of results of that, of people that could potentially sue you. So in that aspect of it, I kind of get where they're like immune, but it bothers me. I don't like accountability. When you don't have any accountability, that is a bothersome thing.
And I think that's the big thing, is there's no accountability on that aspect. So I think it started off, like we had talked about, I think it started off with good intentions. And like, I would say, maybe with like the smallpox aspect, and then it rolled into the polio. And then there was the Qatar incident. And if you actually dig into that, you can actually see where there's some very foul play within that, when they initially rolled out with Jonas Salk's polio vaccine. But, and that's like, could be a whole topic in itself. You know, because they knew that there was contamination within the vaccine when they were doing the processing, but they left it in there and they let it roll out. And all of these people ended up being contaminated with a specific virus, cancer-causing virus.
Well, that's no bueno. That's
no good.
It's pretty bad going from polio to cancer.
Yes. So, but it kind of progressed. So in 1986 is when they actually gave the pharmaceutical companies blanket immunity for vaccinations. So if you were to look at the CDC schedule, so in 1983 was when I was born, they actually had, I want to say it was like 24 doses is what I would have gotten in 1984 versus today in, 2020, it's actually 69 doses.
Are you saying by a certain age, when you're saying doses, are you talking about age, like total vaccinations?
No. Yes. Yes, by the time you're 18 years old, it's 69 doses. So I received 24, but yet by the time now, you actually receive 69 doses
for That's pretty
in
crazy.
2020. Yeah. So, you know, when you look at that, you actually, if you look at the CDC schedule kind of as time progresses slowly, you know, through the 19, 80s through the 1990s, you know, 1995, chickenpox came out, which, I mean, I had chickenpox. Yeah. Most people had chickenpox during that time, and they were fine. You know, I mean, are some people not fine? Yes, but you have to weigh kind of the pros and cons of, you know, would you rather just have that rash for a week, or would you rather get the vaccine? Does the rash suck? Absolutely, I had it, but,
yeah,
you know, I'm good with that. But 1986 is when they gave the pharmaceutical companies that blanket immunity for vaccinations. And partly what ended up happening, if you actually look at the research on it, is that prior to 1986, they actually were getting slammed with lawsuits because of these adverse reactions. Part of that was probably from the DTP vaccine. I'm sure it was actually all of them, but I know the DTP, which is what it was at that time. Now it's DTaP or TDAP, depending on what age you get it. So that was the diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis vaccine during that time. So that was a whole cell vaccination. So they were actually getting hit left and right with lawsuits that were taking a ton of time, you know, to go through the court process. It could take years. And by that time, you know, a child dies, you know, there's, you know, what do you do at that point? You have a loss of life, whatever the situation may be. So they actually decided, under good intentions, of saying, okay, we're going to do blanket immunity for these. We're going to have a vaccine court set up so that we can kind of get through these cases quicker. That was the intention. That's not what it is today. So a lot of people are actually trying to get that overturned and actually eliminate that act so that we can bring back the normal judicial system for these people and actually have a normal case. So what happens now is that you go through the court process. You have to hire your own attorneys. You have to get your own witnesses, whether they be medical witnesses. You have to follow that process yourself. You have to pay for that yourself. But on the flip side of that, you actually have the Department of Justice that is actually doing the defending, which we in turn pay for as well. Yeah. So, and everybody that receives a vaccine actually pays 75 cents per vaccine that goes into this pot, basically. And that's the money that gets paid out if you're actually, if you win your case,
really?
Which is extremely hard to win the cases.
Yeah, because there is, you know, what's funny about that is it just makes me think about, like, when you're, when you've broken the law, right? If you're, you know, if you've committed a criminal act of some sort, you get an attorney provided for you, right? If you can't afford one will be provided for you. So it's funny that you can literally go break the law and almost get more legal counsel. It sounds like consolation than you would, or counseling, I should say, than if you're just trying to bring forth a legal case. I'm, again, like I said, and I'm obviously playing devil's advocate here, I kind of get the whole idea of, like, there are those that are out there with the idea of should just get rich, right? So I get the idea of, like, oh, this happened and that happened and falsifying information. But it seems that with some of this, does it go two ways? Does it, as far as, like, if your child has an adverse effect or a reaction, I should say, and they're affected, what are the numbers on that far as, I think with, again, going back to the measles one, it was like one, I think, I want to say with the vaccination, it was one in every 3,000 had a seizure. And then if you didn't get vaccinated at all, it was like three out of every 3,000, the same amount of numbers. So it like tripled the number far as having a major adverse effect to them far as measles. So
what you saw is what you three kids had seizures if they did not get vaccinated?
No, they just said adverse effect. And again, and that's where it gets vague, right? Where you're like, well, what does adverse mean? What is that?
Right.
Because it should be, like, on the vaccination side, it was specified they had a seizure. Does it seem like that most of the seizures never led to death or anything like that? But they were pretty extreme. Some of them were pretty scary.
Right.
But nobody actually, like, that I seen, I mean, obviously people have died, you know, of that nature. But far as, like, they specifically broke it down to that one thing, as far as the seizures being the big,
right.
I don't know if that's just the biggest reaction that they were getting. But that's what it broke down to for them. And it was basically saying from their little study they did that, well, you've got a one in three option, you know, one out of every 1,000. If you get vaccinated, they could have an incident. But if you don't, you've got a 3 in 1,000 percentage of something bad happening. Again, I'm not promoting the idea of,
I would like to actually see that information because, I haven't heard that one. The hard part is with any virus or any illness, really, when you can actually mount a fever, if your fever spikes quickly, let's just say it goes from 98.6 up to, you know, say 102 or 103 fast, you can actually have that febrile seizure. So, but I don't want to say that's normal, but that's your body's response to that. Yeah. I mean, is it good to have a seizure? No, but that's the natural response sometimes.
Yeah.
So as far as adverse effects, they could be talking about a fever. They could be talking about a sore injection site. They could be talking about, you know, cellulitis. I mean, eczema. Like it could be anything, you know. And that's the hard part is you don't know.
From what the guy talked about on there, that's what it was to say, to your point, from what the guy talked about, as far as those that weren't vaccinated that had adverse reactions, it didn't list anything far as like a seizure. But it seemed weird that they were drawing that. That's how, because what I was listening to was a very pro, you know, we need to vaccinate. Right. And that was the correlation that they were making, is that you had basically a three in a thousand chance of an adverse effect happening if you weren't vaccinated, whereas if you got vaccinated, the most intense, worst thing that could happen would be these scary seizures. So that was kind of like their conclusion for that particular, for measles, not even getting into the topic of, like, I guess it's extremely contagious, right? Like it's like they say it's a 90% contagious rate, right? Where basically you're screwed, kind of like the Rona too, far as like it can linger, it can be, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. So that whole idea of, I think that one of the other big things that bothers me, besides them not being able to be investigated, even like I said, I have like a love hate relationship with it. I think that it shouldn't be the way that you're saying, far as where you got to fund everything yourself. Then why is it not funded both ways? Why are we not having a fair trial, at least, right? We're equally coming into play here. And then but my second point would be that one of my biggest concerns I always had, besides finding out that there were basically those that were researching the vaccine to say, to give it a thumbs up or thumbs down, besides them finding out that they were basically paid for by the people who are going to sell it, so they're, you know, footing the bill of those that are studying it. The second part was the whole blanket, and I understand you're doing it on a mass scale, but the blanket vaccine for every individual, like you brought up, the immunity systems being different for each and every person. Like, let's just take into account blood types. Maybe the flu and all that different stuff are different diseases. And again, I'm not a biologist, so I don't know this stuff. Doesn't really care what blood type you are. But I would be very curious to understand of, like, the way that my body reacts to something and handles it versus yours. And so having this blanket vaccine that's supposed to be the cure, or not, I shouldn't say cure, but the answer for all of us, does seem weird that they want that pushed on us so hard sometimes, where I think that we're all a little bit uniquely designed. And perhaps I'm just ignorant in this area, where measles doesn't care and it will just affect you, period. But have you ever thought about yourself that way? Is that something that was ever bothersome for you? Or
I think if you look at it now, let's just, as far as the COVID, so obviously we're seeing in the news that it hits everybody different. So this is a respiratory illness. You know, we're all potentially going to get it at some point, or so they say, but it's going to hit everybody different. So you have the younger, you know, the younger population that is probably a little bit more healthy. They're not having necessarily the symptoms that the older population has. Or you have the ones that are maybe, you know, maybe they have some kind of genetic disposition where it's affecting them differently, and they end up, you know, with clots, or, you know, more severe breathing issues, and it goes into pneumonia, or, you know, I mean, there's all of these different factors. I think it's no different than how it is right now with COVID versus how it is with a vaccine that's on the market. I think people just look at that because they've been told repeatedly over and over again that, yep, the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine is good. It's safe. It's effective. Everybody can have it. When in reality, we're kind of seeing this situation unfold. Clearly, everyone can't have COVID, which is probably less, I guess, severe than measles, you know, where, you know.
Measles look pretty terrifying, I'm not going to lie.
it actually does scary concern disease. Me, just because I've researched it, but
yeah.
So you look at this where people are like, well, it doesn't affect everybody the same. It doesn't affect everybody the same. They could end up with this. They could end up with long-term side effects. Well, what do you think is going to happen when you give a vaccine to everybody? Not everybody's the same. They might have a genetic disposition. There's a lot of talk about MTHFR gene mutation, you know, where a lot of people have certain, you know, certain mutations of that, where, you know, they don't detox properly. So if they're given a vaccine, their body might not necessarily detox those toxins properly. So then it stores in their body. And then what does it do with it? It just sits there and accumulates. So then they keep getting those vaccines, or they keep getting those environmental factors of, you know, junk in the food or the air that we're breathing, all of those things. And then one day something's going to trigger them to just kind of make their body explode. And yeah, it could be an autoimmune disease. It could be, you know, I mean, who knows? I mean, there's a multitude of things that could happen. And that's scary. And people need to recognize that.
Well, and that's, you know, with the measles thing in particular, because that seems to be the big one that's, if we're being completely transparent, which we are on this, mm-hmm. I mean, I want to say, I don't know if it was the WHO or who it was, that I think it was the World Health Organization. That's the WHO, right? The World Health mm-hmm. Organization, whatever.
Yep.
Listed anybody who's opposed to vaccinations as a top 10 global threat to yeah. the world, you know, globally, this year. And I think it even started in 2017 that it made the top 10 of like, yeah. these people are a real threat. And I want to say there's even spots that we're saying within the United States that you as a parent can face up to a $600 fine. And I don't remember what the time was, but you could face a jail time for not vaccinating. Now it was, again, this was a, I started to notice when I was trying to look some up, like even pro-vaccination stuff, is that sometimes some of that stuff was like blanketed. They didn't give, and I don't like things that do that when they don't give a link to show me like, well, what are you saying? Like a city, a county within a city, you know, like, what are we talking about? Or within a state, I mean, that put these sanctions in place to be like, these are going to be the, you know, outcomes of you not vaccinating. But I know that they, it sounded like the United States didn't have that big of an issue with measles as of right now. But there was somewhere in Europe, Ukraine Germany. Or someplace, somewhere.
Germany, Germany, I know it hit pretty, I think it was Germany that they got hit pretty bad
yeah.
actually the year before.
They were saying something
they actually
like
were,
70.
They were issuing fines.
Were they? Yeah, because they were saying yeah. something like, I want to say he said 53 or 73,000. I can't remember in that year. They went from mm-hmm. 2017 to where it's at now. And that is a lot. I mean, that is a crazy mm-hmm. jump, right? Again, you got to take in a population amount, what's going on in, within those spots. Right. But that hasn't hit here, but that is the big concern right now. And, right. you know, the basically what we're dealing with in a sense, in my opinion, is freedom of choice. And there seems to be some things that are getting put in place to basically say, if you don't get in line, then there are going to be these repercussions. And it's mm-hmm. worrisome. I mean, obviously we have, everybody always compares it to, well, you got to wear a seatbelt, right? That's a law that we have to follow. So I don't really like those comparisons. You know, that's like, it bothers me a little bit because, again, they could say, well, vaccinations totally make sense, just like wearing a seatbelt. But it is worrisome to me where it could go, because it never just seems to stop at one thing. It's
right.
I mean, this being a prime example of what we lived through the last almost 6 months now, right? Of it was like 15 days, it was this, it was that, and then it like continually just went on and on. And it seems like things are maybe starting to get a little better now, but that slow fade of just conditioning people, which is what our show always talks about, like conditioning people over a process of, you know, social media outlets, TV, movies, all these things, that even music, just whatever you allow. And if they all lead back to one thing, really conditioning people down. And I know that's where people always get after me, saying like, you go down a conspiracy path, but it's not really. If you look at what's been pushed down our throats through television in particular, and the whole idea of what happens when people don't vaccinate, it is pretty terrifying. But I see on the flip side of that too, I feel like it could go either way. You could have people saying, oh my God, vaccines is going to be what kills us. And then you have on the other side where the people are like, people that aren't going to vaccinate are going to kill us. So it seems very, and they're at each other's throats in a very a fierce manner. Those that seem to be yeah. in the middle. Yeah. Those that are in the middle don't seem to really, like, we're not really allowed to be in the middle. We have to like make a choice. And that does bother me, because I want to make an educated choice. Right. And I know for yourself, like, I mean, when people find out that you don't really support vaccinations openly, I mean, if that ever comes up, I don't know if it does often for you. Do you get a lot of lashback? I mean, what is the main things that people bring up to you? What are some things that, if you could imagine a listener's trying to, if they were talking to you right now, what are some things that they would be screaming at you as response to what you've said so far?
Probably that I'm a baby killer. Really? Maybe go vaccinate your crotch goblins.
The crotch goblins, again.
Yeah, you know, they always try to bring up kind of just different things that have happened over, you know, say like the last 30 years, even starting with polio. You know, they bring up polio, they bring up, you know, measles and in regards to Andy Wakefield.
Which is that the person? Bring up
taglines. Yeah, that was the one that you mentioned.
Okay. To be fair, yeah, I guess we should, I never did get into even asking those questions. To be fair, that was one question that one of the listeners of our show wanted to bring up. It was him. That was like their smoking gun, right? They were like, hey, if you're going to talk about anti-vaccinations, let's bring up the guy who falsified all this information, supposedly, and, you know, basically linking autism to vaccinations. So, I mean, obviously, if that's an elephant in the room, what is, you know, you don't have to go any farther than you don't want to, but what is that there? Because I didn't know about, you know what I mean? I didn't really know anything about it. So, I mean, why is that a smoking gun for those that support vaccinations? Why do they always point to that?
You know, that was a huge media issue back when it happened. I want to say that was like about 1998, 1999. The biggest thing I can say for that is that people really need to do their research. So in regards to Andy Wakefield, he is originally from England. He is a gastrointestinal doctor. If you actually listen to his side of the story, he does have a podcast that's out, and you can actually listen to his side of the story, and he goes through everything from start to finish of what happened. He actually never said that it's because of the vaccine, that the vaccine is causing this. What ended up happening was he had some parents that came to him, some kids that were having gastrointestinal issues. They said, I don't know what's causing this. I think it might be because of this. This is kind of timeline of when it happened. So he started to look into it based on the children that he had within his practice group. So I want to say it was like 11 or 12 kids, maybe 15 kids. I can't really remember off the top of my head. So they went through their studies. And it wasn't, there was about five or six doctors that ended up actually publishing this paper in The Lancet. This was the famous paper that was retracted. So they never actually said that the MMR is what caused it. They just said that there's gastrointestinal issues that are happening within these kids after they received this vaccine. Look at the retracted paper.
Again, I don't want to, because it sounds like he could be his own podcast in and of its own, far as like an episode.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't want to go too far on it. But what was the vaccine that they were receiving? Are we just talking any vaccine or what?
No, it was the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine. So that's the vaccine you don't get until you are a year old.
Okay.
So now, so you're a year old by the time you get your first dose of that vaccine, and now they actually give a booster at, I want to say it's like 3 or 4 years old, you get the second booster with that. So that was the vaccine that was kind of coming into question just because of the ingredients and the timeline of when they saw their kid change from kind of normal to something is wrong. And realistically, a lot of autistic kids have gastrointestinal issues.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the things that, to be fair and transparent, the little bit I know about it from when I was reading on it and listening to somebody else talk about it, they said that, two things they said about him. Well, number one, they were not a fan of him. I've got to put that out there right now. So some of the information, they were not a fan of him. But they felt that he was the cause of the tidal wave of anti-vaxxers. He is like the, you know, what started it in the 21st century for everybody. And, but they said that two things. They said that he paid the parents or something. He paid family members or children to get to test their blood without, like, it was weird. They said he did some sketchy stuff to get the blood results anyways or something along those lines. That was one of the points they brought up. And it was literally how they worded it. It was like they were vague themselves giving the information. And then number two said that he stood to gain a ton of money off this somehow. There was something he had lined up that if it came true, do you know what that's about at all? Or have you ever heard about him going to be getting rich?
I have never heard of that side of the story. No? Okay. Ever. I have never heard that. I don't know really what the gain would be. I mean, because look at the place he's in now. I mean, he's not practicing anymore by choice. He could have actually gone back to, you know, to fight that and get his license reestablished. But by choice, he didn't want to be in the field that was basically being deceitful.
Yeah.
And they now know though there was a whole big issue within the Lancet and like just the medical journals itself. And this is, I tell people, listen to the podcast and get his side of the story. He, you know, he's on Apple, he's on, I think, Spotify and whatever else that's out there, some cloud, you know,
heck yeah. App, well, what's he called? But I mean, if people want to check him out at least, because I always like, I mean, if you know what his podcast is called, I usually put the link, I'll find him. And
I do. Let me look it up real quick. And I think it actually might just be the Andy Wakefield.
No worries. Well, while you're looking it up too, I guess one other important thing I should mention about that. So Andy Wakefield, from my understanding, basically made a correlation between what he was seeing in the gastral, you know, the gut of a child, and linking that to, what did he say, aluminum and something else to the brain, and the idea of basically autism. So making the correlation between autism and this said vaccine. But a lot of other people, their pushback on that basically says that, well, most children, I think something like 80, I can't remember the number off the top of my head. It was in the upper 80s% of all children who end up being autistic start to show the signs at a year old. So they felt that it was like almost that's already was going to happen anyways. And then he was making a correlation or a link that looked like it was there, but it wasn't really there, because that was something that was naturally going to happen anyways. And again, I don't know enough about this guy or the story. I just know that he was it's a very controversial point that everybody points to immediately, far as, mm-hmm. you know, well, here's the guy that if you're even going to quote him or use any of his information, then you're already off. Like, I'm not even going to talk to you. But to be fair, I just wanted to put that out there, that if you're going to look any of this stuff up for yourself too, it was one of the top three things that popped up for me.
100%. Yeah.
That you're going to find. Yeah. When you start looking into this, the other question that was posted, and they were completely okay with their name being used, and it wasn't really a question. I mean, it is a question, but it's kind of a question statement. This is by a Matt Doran, and he said, ask her why there are so many idiots that think vaccines are bad. Fair question. I mean, it is a question. I mean, there are getting to be more and more people that ask this question. But yeah, what do you, first of all, I'll let you just respond to that, because what are your thoughts on that, I guess?
I am not an idiot.
Yeah.
I would say to that, usually when someone kind of makes a blanket statement like that, they actually, A, don't have kids, or B, they actually haven't researched the topic themselves. I've gotten it a lot. Actually, someone that we used to work with just flat out said, if you don't vaccinate, you shouldn't even have kids. Well, that's great. You don't have kids yourself, coming from the person I came from. Basically, though, typically, I would say 99% of the time, people that are now what we would call, or not even me, I consider basically pro-choice for medical aspect, but what people would call anti-vaxxers, they weren't always anti-vaxxers. They became anti-vaxxers because they did vaccinate and their child did have an issue, did have an adverse effect, did end up, say, you know, with some type of, you know, autism, asthma, you know, Guillain-Barre syndrome, whatever they ended up with. Is something happened to their child that brought them to question and dig deeper, and then they're in the situation that I'm in. So it's not like, you know, everybody, it's not like we're just saying, nope, from the get-go, like, we're not going to vaccinate. You know, we don't believe in that. We did believe in that. And here we are today.
Well, and he kind of had a second part to it, because I was, you know, briefly talking to him a little bit. And he basically said the second part of what he had to say about it, because I, first of all, I said, you know, I asked him, like, do you want to remain anonymous? Do you care if I use your name? Blah, blah, blah. And he said, you know, when it comes to anti-vaxxers, you can use my name anytime you want. In his opinion, this is a quote, and I quote, they are willingly ignorant, thereby putting everyone around them in mortal danger. They are a scourge, unquote. So that is kind of for somebody, and again, I'm not asking you, you know, to, I don't think you're going to change his mind. and I'm not asking you to, but for someone who, there are those who are in his position that maybe are not as set in an opinion as he is, because he has his own research that he's done. And feels this is what he relies upon. He believes in science, and he believes that people who are against the idea of vaccinations are basically throwing science out the door and stomping on it. But the idea of being willfully ignorant, I do feel, and I'm not saying this for you, but as anti-vaxxers as a whole, a lot of people I've noticed have thrown that that term on them as a whole, as a group, right, in an organization, that you're just willfully buying into this echo chamber of people who are all saying the same thing, that vaccines are bad, and they're in on it to get us, and so you're all just ignorant, which, I'll be honest, I actually prefer to be called ignorant than stupid, because at least ignorance just means that I haven't learned something yet, whereas stupidity is a whole other thing. But to that statement, what, I mean, I guess it kind of goes right back into what you've already said, but I mean, do you feel that it's willful ignorance? Do you feel that some people just become an anti-vaxxer because they are willfully choosing to be ignorant and disregard science as a whole?
No, I think to that respect, I don't really know when science ever became actually settled. And if he has the science that is settled, I mean, I'd love to see it in regards to vaccinations. I want the actual science, that actually proves that these vaccines are safe and effective. Mm-hmm. And even in December of 2019, the WHO, which I'm not a fan of, but during their yearly, I think they were maybe in, I don't even know, Geneva, maybe they were all together with their doctors, kind of like their yearly summit, they actually stated that they have never tested the vaccine schedule as it sits today. So they may have tested each vaccine individually against a placebo, but not against a saline placebo. It's against another vaccine, or maybe like the aluminum adjuvant. So they test them individually, but they don't test them based on the schedule. So when your child goes in, say for, the 6 month, I think around 6 months, they're getting,
Brooklyn's due for a bunch.
Yeah. I think 6 months, you actually get five shots, a total of 8 doses. So a total of 8 different viruses or bacteria at one sitting. They've never tested that together. So they have no idea what your body is going to do with all of those vaccines at one time. So if that science is settled, which the WHO said it's not, they don't know, please present it to me. Because if you're willing to take that gamble, that's fine. That's your choice, your family. But at the end of the day, I'm not willing to take that gamble for the very small chance that my child's going to end up with chickenpox and survive and gain, lifetime herd immunity. Yeah. Or measles, my child's going to survive and gain that immunity. Say pertussis at the age of, say a year old or 6 months or whatever it is, everyone's going to get pertussis. It's really not like, it's kind of like rotavirus. You're going to get it. It's not like if you get it, it's when you get it.
Yeah.
You're going to survive in most case scenarios. So unless that person's going to come to those people's houses and sit there with them 24/7 while they have a kid sitting in diapers that's throwing poop on the walls at the age of 15, yeah, I feel like that's a pretty ignorant statement to make.
Well, it's because I do know him personally a little bit, obviously. I know one of his responses. Him and I have talked about this briefly before. Nothing too in depth, but he's always pointed to, because he's not at all. So don't take this wrong, Matt, because I know you're probably listening. You're not old, but he's from a different generation that actually was at the tail end of the polio and the measles and all that. So he has that perspective.
I kind of figured that was the case. I was going to ask you that.
I think mid-50s, somewhere in there, early 50s, somewhere right in there, so mid to early 50s. So, he's got a different perspective on something that, again, we never even had to fear, right? Or even think about, really. And that's always been his answer, is that you have these people who are, something was basically eradicated is now making a comeback. And the correlation that's being made is, well, you have more and more people not vaccinating. So, which perhaps is true, but do we have science again? Do we actually have, like you're saying, the science to prove that? Do we know for a fact that that's the case, or has the thing mutated itself? I mean, the flu mutates, I think, every, 6 to 8 months. And if it's the Rona, it can mutate like every 2 weeks. Okay. It's a new thing. To that point, though, as far as what you said about it's your family and putting your child in danger, I know one of the guy. He actually didn't get to write on there, but he's asked this before. You know him, actually. You know Brian, right?
Who is it, did you say?
Zink, Brian Zink.
Oh, yeah.
So he's brought that up to his point, because this goes way back to on our page when we had kind of a blow up when people were talking about this months and months ago. his question about that was, because again, he had a, you know, a younger son at the time, new parent,
right?
And going through that process of like, it's funny, we all hear about it, but then like once you're a parent and once you're responsible, it's a whole new thing. But his question in some ways was too, is like, well, on the same principles that you feel you're doing its best by your child's putting my child in danger by not being vaccinated. You're counting on my child's immunity and their vaccinations to hold up to your child. So, I mean, that seems to be a huge point of contention with those that, that's a lot of people say, you know, I wouldn't have such a problem with them if they were just risking their own family, but they're risking my family too, without my consent. So, I mean, is that a fair way to ask that question? Do you think that, I mean, is that,
that's
is that a fair
kind
perspective?
Of, yeah, I mean, I think that's an emotional perspective, which is fair. I mean, everybody has different feelings on that. One of the biggest things that a lot of people in my stance will say is that, why I'm not willing to set my child on fire to keep yours warm. So I'm not willing to set my child on fire with maybe an extreme reaction to a vaccine, you know, to keep someone else's child warm. And then the other aspect too, if the vaccines actually work, what are people concerned about?
Yeah.
So like in regards to like the measles, mumps, and rubella. So 1983, I received one dose of measles, mumps, and rubella. I have not had a single dose since that time frame.
Yeah.
Do we know within the science that all of those people within that time frame that are now adults, do we know that those people actually still have that immunity? Not unless you go get tested. You're not going to know that. So the polio aspect, I feel like, you know, that's kind of gone out the window. You know, was that scary for the people that ended up with paralytic polio? Was there extra fear instilled? Absolutely. I don't think it's any different than what's going on right now with the COVID. People have such an emotional response to the polio, to the measles, to the COVID, that I don't know that they're going to see past that. It's it's been, like you said, it's been conditioned into them at this point. But, you know, it's such a touchy subject. So, it's hard. And that's why, that's why I say I'm a pro-choice. I'm not opposed to people doing what they choose is best for their family, but they have to understand that just as they're choosing that, someone else may choose the opposite, and it's not necessarily going to affect someone else. But in regards to like me having that one dose, I don't know if I have titers. I haven't been tested for that. So polio's out the window because, you know, we haven't had a case here in probably about 30 years. Does polio still happen in third world countries? Absolutely, it happens in third world countries, but it's also happening because they're still giving that oral polio vaccine. We had obviously outbreaks of measles, mumps, and rubella last year or the year before. It hit New York. I think it hit California. I think we had a couple cases here in Michigan. But that's always been there. There's always been those kind of few cases, a couple hundred cases here and there. That's always happened. But that's because also the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine wears off. Some people only gain immunity for 2 years. Some people gain it for 10. Some people gain it for 30. Everybody's body is going to mount a different immune response. So unless all of these adults are actually going to get tested to see, or if they are getting boosters or not getting boosters, we can't, I mean, it could be an adult that's passing it on that maybe it isn't necessarily actually getting the response. They just are carrying it asymptomatically.
It's crazy too, because I think it was the measles. They were saying to gain herd immunity that something like 90% of the population would have had to have either gotten the vaccine or been like built an antibody to it, because otherwise we're not at herd immunity. And I will say that
I'm curious where they get those numbers from.
That is the one thing that, and this goes to both sides, right? You get those because and like anything, when things first start slowly coming out with anything, and this one is a little more touchy and a definitely different subject than say the stuff that I'm into, but let's say, I don't know how like into alien stuff you are at all. Like, is that something you've ever even thought about or talked about?
I've never even went down that path.
So for the quick synopsis of it, there was a guy that came out in the, I want to say the mid 80s, named Bob Lazar, came out, said he was the scientist, kept him, you know, they kept him like in the shadow, right? He's in, what do they call it? And then they kept him anonymous, right? There's another term for it, but they kept him anonymous and all this stuff because he was like, if they know who I am, they're going to kill me. And basically was the whistleblower on Area 51, which is like, everybody knows that Area 51 is a real place now, right? We all readily accept that military, right. That's a real place. But right. In the 80s, that was like a hush and whisper, kind of like you were, you know, smoking some green stuff, basically, if mm-hmm. you were talking about that. And he took a step farther. He was saying that he worked on an alien spacecraft and all this stuff, and there was like 9 of them. They were trying to reverse engineer them, and he got completely whitewashed. I mean, to the point to where his social security number disappeared. They tried to make him disappear. Family members all got invested by the IRS. Tons of stuff happened, right? And for a long time, if you quoted him or referred to him, referenced him in any way, shape, or form, there was a category you were going to fit into, and it was usually a conspiracy theorist or a tinfoil hat kind of deal. Mm-hmm. And now that the U.S. government themselves has come out multiple times, it's funny, through this whole Rona thing, how many times the Pentagon themselves, the Navy, the Air Force, and who's on the CIA, have all separately released their own statements about otherworldly spacecraft, and they specifically talk about that it is not ours, it's not from Earth. They've all released all these documents through this happening, when everything's like that should, if the Rona wasn't happening, that would be the biggest, should be the biggest story in the world, that like, you guys are admitting that there's something else there, right? Mm-hmm. But the point being, when you started with him originally, it was, there wasn't a lot of evidence to point to. You only had his word, basically. So on the anti-vaxxer side, as it were, you have a whistleblower. Let's say the one who just came out from the CDC, you said, right? Mm-hmm. There was somebody who just recently came out saying...
He came out in 2000 and... What is it now? So maybe around 2012, maybe? I can't even think of the year, to be honest with you. It was William Thompson. He's a scientist, a CDC scientist. He came out basically and blew the whistle on them falsifying the information on the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine. So, and it basically kind of piggybacks what Andy Wakefield was saying in regards to the gastrointestinal issue. And this gets into a whole nother topic, but his statement basically was saying that it does affect these kids. We falsified the data. We were told to falsify the data, you know, by the superiors, basically. Mm. And that basically saying it doesn't cause these things. It's safe. It's effective. It's fine. But really, there was a multitude of issues, and it primarily affects African American boys. For whatever reason, they seem more susceptible to it, and that's a whole another topic
without getting too far down the conspiracy theory path. There are so many evil things that human beings have done, and we know are provable facts now that have been released, the things that the CIA did throughout the 70s and 80s to specific communities, you know, you'd say the African-American community in particular, is insane. Mm-hmm. Those are real things. That's why, when, you know, I'm not getting into it, but with the race being racial issues being such at a tipping point right now, or a boiling point, there's points on both sides. The problem is that you're not seeing the same information that they're seeing, and they're not seeing the same information you're seeing. And that isn't just by accident. We know that, like, with algorithms through whatever social media platform you're on, they know what you're into. And they essentially, I've noticed, especially since that whole like censorship thing really took over about four months ago, they've really made little echo chambers for everybody. Like if you're just scrolling through videos, you used to get a mixture of all kinds of stuff. Now, if I watch a video all the way through, whatever it might be, it could be something about an advertisement of some sort. All of a sudden, the next couple of videos will be similar to that. And people don't, I mean, this is truly taking place where they are making it to where you're only going to reinforce whatever thought or process you're in. And it makes it so hard to try and extend out, I don't use the word like tentacles, but like resources and tentacles to other areas to balance this thought or this process, bounce it off of this. Well, does it make sense according to this, and with this, does it relate? I think in particular with the vaccination thing, I think it's a conversation that we should definitely be having, and we should be having in a manner of coming to some sort of a conclusion. Right now, it's such a heated thing that it usually ends up in some sort of a yelling match between two individuals online, then blocking each other. So it doesn't really get anywhere. And that's scary, because it's only reinforcing the idea of the two camps being drawn up and people doubling down. And I'm sure there are people on both sides. I'm sure there are those that on the anti-vaxxer side that perhaps have shared stories that just were simply not true. And you're going to get that. That's going to happen. Just like the stuff that I'm into, the fringe stuff. There are people who purposely try to take advantage of people and make money off of it because it's an opportunity. They're playing on people's emotions. And I'm sure you deal with that. But I think the
and
concern
sometimes
that
I think those people are people from, you know, outside sources, not necessarily part of the movement. It's no different than what's going on right now, you know, with the whole Antifa aspect. I think that there's people that come in just to kind of like add fuel to the fire on that end. Yeah. And it's unfortunate because it takes the light off the true issues of what's going on.
I think, too, with the vaccine thing, one thing that I think would be interesting for them to I guess like you're saying, they, because to those that are still saying that are listening, I go, well, listen, this stuff is studied. This is shown to be true, even though you've brought up the point of, well, yes, each individual one has maybe been proven to have no adverse effects. So when they test the subject, did they only give them that one thing and then they test that for 15 years before it's released to the public? But they're not actually giving them the whole, what'd you say, 69 shots now, roughly, or treatments?
69 doses. By the time you're 18.
I mean, that's pretty crazy. I didn't realize it was that high. I honestly thought it was like 20, 28. I'm not gonna lie.
I have it right here. I can show you.
There you go.
You can see it. All of these are now, and then this little small portion is 1983.
That's insane. Yeah, for those that are watching on YouTube.
Yeah.
She showed a whole list. It's basically, you know, you've got what she could highlight, what, like 2 inches on the page or 3 inches of what was going on 83. And then the rest of the page and a half is what we're getting now.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
If you had something. No, I was just saying, kind of to piggyback what you were saying as far as, you know, the adverse reactions. It's not really, all of the vaccines have adverse reactions. Not everybody's going, you know, to outwardly present those reactions. Sometimes an internal thing, sometimes you don't get anything or you don't know. So each vaccine individually, you are going to have a reaction you are potentially going to have a reaction. Not everybody is going to have the same response.
Yeah.
But they've never actually tested them all together to see what the reactions are going to be. That's the problem. And as far as the testing, when they do the clinical trials, it really depends on the vaccine as far as length of time that they look to see what the adverse reactions are. Mm-hmm. But it could be anywhere from literally 2 days after receiving the vaccine to like a month.
Wow.
So they're not really looking. Normally in normal pharmaceuticals, they look at them for months. They look at them for years. But with vaccines, because they're not, the vaccines are actually considered biologics. So they kind of fall in like a different area within the pharmaceutical company. They're not tested for the same amount of time. So if you literally, I think it may be Hep B, I want to say, I can't remember off the top of my head. One of them was tested for like 2 or 3 days. So basically they end up putting together. Yeah, it is. It's very unfortunate. So they end up putting together a list. All right, these were the reactions that happened. It could just say, okay, mild fever, you know, on site, like rash where the injection site was. All right, those are reactions. If something happens on day 4, let's say, that's not included in that because that's not what we're covering. We're only covering the 2 or 3 days.
Well, and that's what's weird about this, because if you just Google right now, if you're a person just listening and you're like, if you just type in, are vaccines safe? It's going to tell you what basically the information I got, which is, hey, they study this stuff between anywhere between 15 and 25 years. It goes through intense studies before it's released to the public, and it's 100% safe. Yes, there could be adverse effects, but it's a safe product. It's thoroughly tested. So I guess to kind of wrap things up here soon, I have like 3 questions I kind of want to hit on a little bit or bounce off you at least as an idea. Yeah. Number one, do you mind hitting on the idea of, I was telling Jacqueline here about, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, everybody was locked down, right? And then I think we were right around the height of it. We were like 3 weeks in when we were starting to really peak at the death tolls and in the cases and everything. And our doctor, our physician was like, I wouldn't say relentless, but like they were calling at least twice a week to be like, are you going to schedule or you need to come in for your vaccines? And that just seemed interesting that they were pushing that so hard during a time when it, like, everybody was supposed to be sheltering in place, and they're like, you need to get in here to get your shots. But you and I were talking a little bit about that, and you mentioned that is it all of them or most that get a kickback, not the physician or not the employee itself, but the office, the corporation itself, has a, is it like a quota that they need to hit, you said, approximately?
Yeah, roughly, they have to, yeah, they have to have a certain percentage of their patient base that is fully vaccinated in order to get that, those extra bonuses. And sometimes it, those bonus, they're typically from the insurance companies. Is where those come from. I know Blue Cross Blue Shield, they used to actually have a document up, and it's, you can't really find it anymore, where they would get those bonuses. So let's just say, you know, kind of just, I'm not accurate in the numbers. Let's just say their patient base was 1,000 patients. And, you know, they might have had to have 80% of them that were fully vaccinated. You know, then they would get a certain amount. I think it's like $400 per patient if they were fully vaccinated, which is a huge sum of money. But that's another reason why you see a lot of these doctor's offices, they'll kick patients out if they aren't fully up to date. And it's unfortunate. And, you know, in the, in respect to your situation, them calling you, it's funny to me because they don't want you to go anywhere, you know, but they want you to come in for the vaccines, which on one hand, I can kind of understand because they just, they want to keep up with it because otherwise you're behind if that's your choice, what you choose to do. And then you're kind of playing catch up and you don't want all those at the same time. And then you kind of have to come back every couple months and it's a pain in the butt. But they don't want you out. So the likelihood of you actually, say, coming into contact with someone, you know, that has, you know, say, you know, pertussis or, you know, well, diphtheria is not even around anymore, you know, or measles or, you know, whatever the situation is, the likelihood of that happening is probably pretty low, you know. So the fact that they're pushing you, you know, to get in and get these done is kind of, it kind of saddens me.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing my wife and I were, we were talking about. We're like, if we're not even going to see anybody, then what, like, what is the risk right now? Right. At the time. But I thought that was at least important to bring up for the listener to know that too, that, you know, when people say, because people always say, ask that too, they're like, well, you guys act like there's some sort of incentive program that's paying these guys to give these to people. And I say, well, it kind of sounds like there is. And that's, yeah, that's a factual thing that people can kind of, you know, can look up for themselves. The second thing I would kind of ask is hitting on the specific guy, the whistleblower from CDC there. Is there a separate, like you were mentioning, when with the vaccines in themselves, is it, it's kind of its own separate microorganism from the rest of how they're, I guess, producing pharmaceutical pills or just the main, like the big ones, it's its own little separate entity from everything is what you were saying. So like, how were they being forced to falsify that information? Like, was he a scientist himself? Was he a biologist? Like,
he's a scientist with the CDC. He's actually, I'm almost positive that he, let me look at it up real quick. I'm almost positive that he's exactly what Fauci is.
Well, I guess that was my question is, you know, when we talk about, you know, people saying, well, the big pharma is forcing this. I mean, I guess we still would have to ask the question why. That is still a relevant question. What is the purpose of that? What is the purpose of pushing out something? Obviously, if we know since what you're saying, 86 or somewhere in there where they have no, there's no, you know, they can't be held responsible. So is it they're just that thirsty for profit? I mean, what why would you even risk pushing something out after, you know, even if it's studied for, let's say, a year? That's not enough time to truly know the effects of it mixed, which they're not even testing with other, you know, when it's mixed with other ones. But I guess why falsify this? Why push this guy or his team or whatever it was that was falsifying these numbers? What is the purpose, I guess, too, would be a relevant question.
Well, in regards to the William Thompson thing, he's actually a senior scientist at the CDC, but he is an epidemiologist as,
epidemiologist as well.
So, but so I guess if you kind of look at it as, so if this, the information that he brought to light, if that were to actually be made public, and my understanding is actually sealed documents within the court system, is, can you imagine, you know, what that would do to the entire vaccine, you know, kind of just a global aspect? I mean, you have people that have relied on you and believed in your information, you know, then this comes out. And then it kind of just a domino effect of, okay, well, this vaccine is this. And then you have another scientist that comes out and said, well, I was told to falsify this data and then this one and this one. Yeah. And it would just be a disaster. And how do we fix that, you know, as the United States? How do we go about saying, all right, well, it's a wash, like, we're starting over? I mean, I don't know how you tell people, well, I'm sorry, you know, you have this lifelong immune issue.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. Like, we can't compensate all of these people. You know, in his situation, and like a lot of, you're seeing it with the COVID stuff, you want to keep your job. You have a family yeah. that you need to put food on the table for, and they do have good intentions. They are, not all of them, but there are good doctors, there are good scientists that mm-hmm. have good intentions, you know, and then obviously that weighed heavily on his shoulder. So he just basically blew the whistle on it. I mean, it's an unfortunate thing.
But... Yeah, because more than likely your local, I shouldn't say your local, but whoever your family physician is or provider, more than likely, like you're saying, doesn't sound like they know the ins and outs of whatever's in a vaccine, right? They have the basic, I wouldn't say tagline, but they have this little script that's been mm-hmm. shown to them that this is the results, this is what we need you to follow.
Right.
And so, like I've said, in no way, shape, or form, and I have a ton of, you know, different family members that have either been in the medical field or are, I am not slamming you in any way, shape, or form. I truly, truly believe that those in the medical field sacrifice so much, and just like mm-hmm. teachers in education, give a ton of themselves to that. So I truly do think that they are doing what they think is best with the information they have. But like you're saying, if pressed, hard pressed to provide the information on, and this is the kind of the last thing I wanted to hit on, what's actually in a vaccine, do you think that they are able to do that? And what are some of the, is it all vaccines that have some very questionable things in them, or are there some particular ones in particular, are there a few that you would want to hit on that are questionable to you as far as what's in them?
Oh, I guess it depends on how you view that. I mean, as far as the doctors, I do think doctors are phenomenal. I would never want to be in their shoes, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of the times in regards to this aspect, they only know what they've been taught. So unless they're going yeah. to step outside of that and start digging themselves, they don't typically question that. I mean, if you went to the doctor, let's just say in the past, say you went to the pediatrician's office and you go in and, you know, for, you know, you're 2 months, 6 months, you're actually 2, 4, 6, you know, 12 months, 15 months, 18 months. Do they talk to you individually about each vaccine? Do they tell you what you're getting? Do they tell you that these are the potential side effects? This is what potentially could happen. These are the severe side effects. Typically, that's not the scenario. They typically give you those CDC, you know, brochures. It's like the pink and the yellow and the blue one, you mm-hmm. know, that explains each vaccine. That's typically yeah. what they hand you. I mean, I don't know everybody's kind of position that they've been in. I know that that's what happened to me when we've gone to the doctor's office. We yeah. were never given that informed consent, that true informed consent from the doctor. They just right. hand you those, you know, that those colorful CDC slips
yeah,
that
kind of points.
Go over. Yeah, that's all it is. But that's not informed consent.
No.
Unfortunately, that's not. I mean, they're probably so used to doing it and it's second nature, but that's not informed consent. And that's what people are supposed to be getting. That's part of the oath that they took. That's with any procedure. If you go in for surgery, yeah. they have to tell you this could happen, this could happen, this could happen, but they yep. don't do that same thing with vaccines. And that's unfortunate. So people go in blindly, but yeah. they also know if they told people that they're going to start questioning, well, how often does that happen?
Yeah.
You know, and they always say, oh, it's one in a million. No, it's not really one in a million.
yeah. Yeah. If it was one in a million, I mean, I don't think there'd be, no offense, but really any pushback, right? When it,
right.
just like the numbers we've had with this, but yeah, keep going. I'm sorry. Yeah. One in a million is not
yeah, no,
something for us to really.
It's not even accurate, especially yeah. since they say, I think it was Harvard that did a study. They say that typically it's 1% of people actually report to VAERS when there is, which is the, it's the vaccine adverse events reporting system, 1% of people. So if you can imagine, and that, so basically that compensation has paid out over $4 billion to wow. date. So if you
Wait,
can imagine,
so you're saying 1%, like the fund that all of us have been paying into that 75 cents per vaccine, they have paid out $4 billion to date?
Over $4 billion to date.
That is insane.
But if you think about that, 1% of people are reporting.
Yeah.
And they've paid out over $4 billion.
That's insane.
So it's definitely insane. And not everything is, you don't get compensated for certain things.
Right.
And the max compensation is $250,000 for death.
Holy crap.
For
Wait,
death.
per, I'm sorry.
So let's just say you have a child that dies. $250,000 is what you get.
That's the max you can get.
Right.
That's wow. And they paid $4 billion?
They paid out over $4 billion.
I need Mikey here. He can do the math for us. I'll have to look that up later to see what that is. But yeah, that is a scary thing as far as like you're saying that number. Because that isn't just somebody going, well, yeah, you might have one case where somebody won $20 million. You know what I'm saying? That isn't the case.
Yeah. I don't think there's ever been a award of that amount.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, I know we're coming up on probably close to 2 hours here anyway, so I don't want to keep you for too long. But yeah, I guess we'll have to do a second part here for you as far as digging into some of the things I'd love to hit on are a little more on what's actually in the compounds that are within some of these vaccines, which I think would be an important thing to hit on. And then secondly, leading into what we all could be facing very soon, within for sure, it sounds like within 6 months to at least a year. That time frame of this idea of a global inoculation, and the gentleman behind that, or the companies and gentlemen behind that. So those are some of the things I'd like to have you back on for, far as really digging into. Is there anything you want to say real quick though before we close this particular episode out, and that you think's important that people could kind of check into leading up to our next one with you?
Yeah. I mean, I have my few resources, my kind of go-to that I follow. At this point, I'm 11 years into this, so I'm so confident in my choice that I've made for my family that I don't look back, but I will say that I continually research every single day, multiple times a day, just because I'm kind of, I don't want to say I'm a science nerd, but I'm kind of like, I'm just so interested in that aspect junkie of for medical. It. I am. And my husband makes fun of me all the time for it, but I'm just interested. I'm interested in how the body works. But I'm so confident in my choice that I don't ever look back and think, shoot, did I make the wrong choice? No, because I actually pay attention more now, to the health of my kids. I'm more aware of what's going on with them and, to the point where you can smell a fever, even just the stupidest things like that. But as far as, I know they use the term anti-vaxxer. I don't consider myself an anti-vaxxer. I consider myself being a pro-choice for medical freedom. I think as anybody should be. We have the CDC schedule as it sits today, but that doesn't mean that the ACIP won't say, all right, hey, we're mandating the flu vaccine for everybody across the board. We're mandating the COVID vaccine for everybody across the board. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have a choice. And then you need it to become employed potentially if your employer puts that on, as a stipulation.
There are a couple places already doing that, including education. There are certain schools that require that if you're going to attend that public school, then you need to have your vaccinations have to be up to date.
I'm going to touch on that too real quick, because I do not want to forget for the next time. Yeah, in Michigan, we have 3 exemptions in the state of Michigan. Not all states have all 3 exemptions. Some only have 2, some only have 1. We have medical, we have religious, and we have philosophical. So you actually do not need to be vaccinated to go to public school. So everybody thinks that that's not the case, that you have to be vaccinated. You do not. You do have to go get a waiver from the health department. Or technically you don't have to. You can push back on a school and say, I don't need that. But you do not have to be vaccinated to go to public school. So I just want to throw that out there, because everybody thinks the opposite.
Would someone feel, one of the questions being like, did they feel the CPS could be involved with them on that, or ever have to do because it's the hospital, if you deny consent, right? Don't they, that can, you said that is something that's been brought up in the past, where if you're just outright denied?
There are some cases. I have not really heard that in the state of Michigan. I know California gives big pushback on that. Probably New York. New York, I think, was one of the states that were handing out fines until they got their kids vaccinated with the measles, mumps, and rubella last year or the year before. I personally haven't had to deal with that aspect of it. Even with adopting Carrie out of foster care, I had to deal with the hospital, but I did not. I got some pushback from them, but I was dealing with CPS and they were aware of the situation that we were in, and they didn't give me any issues, knock on wood. Everything was good there, so I was thankful for that. They were willing to work with me on that. To kind of touch on kind of my sources that are my go-to sources, if we don't touch on it next time, one of the biggest ones that I look to is called Immunity Education Group, and that is actually they do a podcast too called the Vaccine Conversation Podcast, and it's with a doctor and then with a parent. He actually goes through, Dr. Bob Sears, he goes through and kind of digs through each vaccine, kind of gives you, you know, the pros and cons, the statistics on everything, and then goes through the vaccine itself, some of the ingredients, what you can look for, you know, adverse reactions, you know, what to expect. So I love that aspect, and you kind of get, a little bit of both within that podcast. And then I also love Children's Health Defense. That was one of them that I mentioned earlier, which is RFK Jr.'s organization, which they have a pretty big team along with some attorneys that are involved with them. And then also ICanDecide.org, which is Del Bigtree's organization. He also runs The High Wire with Del Bigtree on Facebook, and they were actually kicked off of YouTube. They're on some other platforms.
No surprise.
Yeah. So he actually has a website. It's thehighwire.com. But he's part of kind of the push behind informed consent and, you know, medical freedom in that aspect. And there's a bunch of other people that I kind of follow along with as well. But, I'll provide all that information to you so you can kind of link it there as well.
Yeah, for sure. It'll be in the show notes for anybody who's looking for that.
Okay.
And like I said, I always feel bad about any subject I ever cover. I always feel like you did not fail, but I always feel like I failed solely because whatever subject I usually pick to talk about, when you really break things down, it's so much more than that quick synopsis, but we're such a need information now generation or instant, gratification that we don't take time to break things down and see if it makes sense and test it against other things. And in this case, obviously with this in particular, it's so vast that, I don't want to say we just scratched the surface, but we kind of did, because as we're going to dig into, if we have you for sure back on again, into the actual compounds that are within the vaccines, what that could mean going forward, and even see that one last thing, just so I don't forget, you did mention there is a physician, I think, I'm not sure where he's at, but you said that does not allow vaccinations at his hospital or his practice. Is that correct? Or he's looking at other forms?
Yeah, he's actually part of that podcast. It's Dr. Bob Sears. He actually doesn't vaccinate anymore. The last I heard, he doesn't vaccinate anymore at his practice. He's not opposed to people doing them. He actually does not deal with the insurance companies at all.
Okay.
So that's part of the issue with the vaccine, the vaccination aspect. So he doesn't want to deal with them. He doesn't want to be bound by, their time frames, what you have to push through per patient per day and all of that stuff. He wants to be able to spend his time with his patients. So he actually runs his business, where the patient has to pay. And if they want to seek reimbursement from the pharmacy or the insurance company, they can go ahead and submit the claim on their own. That's just how he chooses to do it. He doesn't want to have to be dictated by them.
Yeah.
Which is kind of nice because you know that you're getting, that relationship, that doctor-patient relationship, which you also always have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So, I think, like I said, there's a lot more to cover. And I guess while we're hitting on it, since you mentioned him, wasn't there another lady who's looking at like an alternative, and this is kind of slightly hitting on what we're going to talk about in the next episode as far as the compounds within the vaccine. Mm-hmm. Who was the lady you mentioned? She's like looking at an alternate form of how they're, inoculating people.
Yeah. So it's, she's a scientist. Her name is Dr. Teresa Deischer. She's actually, I want to say, she's either out of California or maybe Oregon or Washington, somewhere on the West Coast that way. I want to say it's soundchoice.org. So she started her own pharmaceutical company to just basically try to make vaccines just safer, not with all of the junk in them, without utilizing aborted fetal fragments. So that DNA is not being passed through, just to make them more clean and more effective and more safe. She definitely has a website. I actually looked at it probably about a week ago, but I believe it's soundchoice.org is her website.
Okay. Sounds good. I mean, like I said, that's something I definitely want to hit on and when we have you back on, just because when you start to hear those kind of references of, aborted fetal matter, it's like, well, why is that in there?
Yeah, and perhaps just a reason to it. Yeah, that's a whole other topic in itself, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. Unfortunately, Micah had to bail on us, so he didn't get to bring in some of his stuff. But he'll be on here hopefully for the next time we have you on. And once again, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your side of this picture. I guess it's a very broad picture, but affects all of us, it seems. So Yeah. As always, guys, stay curious and keep it weird.